Welcome to this episode of Wildcast. I'm your host, Matt Blymeyer. Our guest on this episode is a native of Ford City, Pennsylvania, outside of Pittsburgh. She was a graduate of Allegheny College, was a GA at Utica, an assistant coach at CUCA, took her first head coaching position at Salem State before becoming the head women's basketball coach at Penn College. Welcome in, Brittany Mone. Brittany, thank you for joining us.
Matthew, I'm just really appreciative that you said Pittsburgh the right way.
With an X.
Pittsburgh.
Yes, that's how I hear it when the Mone family visits and how you pronounce it. So I was trying to be, you know, polite and say it the way it's supposed to be said.
The correct dialect.
Yeah. It's what your people
tell me. True Yinzer way.
All right, Brittany, let's talk about your journey to coaching. After a college career at Allegheny, you took a GA position at Utica. You followed that with an assistant position at CUCA. And then you got your first head coaching position at probably a relatively young age at Salem. Let's talk about those three stops, what you learned as a GA, the time you were an assistant, and then, my goodness, taking a head position, what, 3 or 4 years out of college. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so after I was done playing at Allegheny, I kind of knew that I wasn't done with basketball being a part of my life and a part of my journey. My coach, Kay Costanzo, got me an interview for the GA position at Utica, which was great because I ended up getting my master's for free, which was also something that I wanted to do, was continue my education and get my master's, which is in economic crime and fraud management, so completely different field than the realm that I decided to take. In my GA position at Utica, I would say that's where I learned a lot about basketball. And I give a lot of that credit to Michelle Davis, who coached at Utica for many, many years, who just retired from coaching basketball this year. She kind of helped me find my passion in basketball, in teaching, and understanding the relationships that you need to make with your student athletes. And that was something that I definitely carried with me. Also, her passion on the court. I think I get a lot of that when I'm on the court as well, which you will see.
Yeah.
And the foot stomping.
Foot stomping.
Yeah. That's why I probably shouldn't wear heels and boots anymore. They get me in trouble.
Yes.
And then whenever I went to CUCA, I was there for a year. I was the head men's and women's cross-country coach and the assistant women's basketball coach. So I got a little bit of an insight into head coaching with cross-country, and coaching men for the first time was a unique experience. But whenever it snowed in May in upstate New York, I kind of realized that was not meant for me. I needed warmer weather, which is what took me down to Salem. I actually got that head coaching job whenever I was turning 25. So I was very young, and I think that experience taught me a lot. I think whenever you're coaching, one of the things that you will always absorb is the things that you like from other coaches and from your athletic directors and the people that you work with. But I think the things that you learn the most are from experiences that you wouldn't want to carry with you. Because then that shows you as a coach and as a person the experiences you want for your student athletes and the experiences you want to have with your coworkers. Whenever I was at Salem, I had a lot of different hats. I was the head cross-country coach, head track coach, senior woman administrator, and head basketball coach. So my off-season never existed there. So running around and kind of constantly always doing something with a plethora of student athletes kind of wore me down and made me realize that I needed to focus in on my one true passion, and that was basketball. And that's kind of what brought me here.
Becoming a head coach for the very first time, what was that phone call like, getting that call from the AD at Salem and then having to make that decision, one, to become a head coach for the first time, move very far away from kind of what you're used to. Now, New York's a little bit further from Pittsburgh than Allegheny is, but it's still much bigger of a drive where your family and your support system is, because your family is incredibly supportive of your program and you. What was that phone call like, and what were the roller coaster of emotions maybe you were feeling when you had to make that decision initially to be a first-time head coach?
I think the first thing that came to my mind was, are you sure? Especially with being so young. But the athletic director at the time, Melissa Barrett, who was giving me the call, really gave me a lot of confidence that this is something that I would be able to tackle as a young coach. And then I did ask for a couple of days before I gave my response, because like you said, my family is very important to me. And moving to Winston-Salem from upstate New York, I was about seven and a half hours away from home. But I knew that coaching was going to be a part of my journey, and sometimes you have to take risks in your career, and especially in this career, you got to go where the job is. You can't go just because you want to be in that location. And I think taking that leap and taking that jump and moving to North Carolina by myself at the age of 25, I really found myself in my 20s and became more independent and became more of who I wanted to be, because nobody knew who I was. It was a fresh start for me as a person and as a coach. And it was an exciting time to start my journey. And I'm really thankful for that opportunity, because if I did not get that opportunity at such a young age, I wouldn't be where I am today.
While at Salem, first time head coach, did you have a moment where you had a welcome to head coaching moment where something happened and it was like, oh, this is me. I have to make that decision, and then maybe really reinforce that, oh my goodness, I am a head coach now.
Yeah, I would say I got that really early, especially from my basketball team. Being 25 and my oldest player was 22, there was that line of, is she my friend or is she my coach? And I think whenever they were trying to overstep that boundary is when I needed to be like, okay, I do want to earn their trust. I do want to build this culture. I do want them to buy into what I'm doing, but I need to do it from a professional level and not from a friend level. And I needed to learn to gain that respect from them as a head coach and not their friend. So drawing that line kind of was that, here we are, we're in this moment. We're not friends with our student athletes. We're mentors, we're teachers. And that was the line where I was like, time to grow up.
Yeah. You spent 4 to 5 years at Salem, and then the position here at Penn College opened. Walk us through the reasoning of applying at Penn College and then your decision to accept the position once it was offered to you.
Yeah, I think one of the main reasons that I was looking is I spent 5 years at Salem, and I felt like it was time to get back home, home state of Pennsylvania, or a little bit closer to home. So I was looking for schools that were around the area of Pittsburgh, within a driving distance, that if I needed to, I could go home, see my family. My nephew was being born, so family is super, super important to me. So I wanted to be able to be in an area that was close enough that I could still be a part of my family's life for all of the time and commitment that they've put in to be a part of this life and this journey as a coach. When this job opened up, I was actually very excited about it, because I worked at private liberal arts schools, played at a private liberal arts school, and the degrees that we teach here were really appealing to me because of the future that our student athletes have. And being here and seeing it in person has been such a rewarding experience compared to the other experiences that I've been a part of at other institutions.
Were you familiar with Penn College from your time at Cuke? I'm trying to remember if we were both in the NEAC at the same time.
I just left Cuke whenever you... Yep.
Okay. So this was completely a new institution, everything to you.
Correct. Had to do my research.
So you get the job here and you realize that it is, I wouldn't say complete, but probably a 90% rebuild project of where we were and where we needed to go. What was the first thing in your mind that you had to tackle to set the course to where we are now, 5-6 years later?
Yeah, I think building that culture off the court is where I had to start. I remember in my interview, I came in and I showed them my packet and told them all the things that I wanted to do and how regimented it is, that it's going to be very precise and there isn't going to be a, what if this scenario or what if that scenario? No, like this is what it was going to be. And I remember Cassie Coons, who is now my assistant now, was like, no, we don't want her. She's too scary. She seems like she's about to come in and just take this program and turn it upside down. And I don't think she was ready for that. But I think looking back now, she understands what having to come in and changing a culture looks like. And that sometimes you need to be the bad guy, but that's putting in the 10-minute rule. You have to be 10 minutes early to everything that we're doing, making sure that we're being advocates for other programs across campus, whether that's in athletics, whether that's other clubs and organizations, making sure that we're staying on top of our academics, constantly doing check-ins, understanding that team building off the court, whether it's stuff that the coaching staff is asking you to do or you doing it on your own, is what's going to make us successful on the floor. And that was the first step that I needed to take was, we need to become a team. We need to become a family off the floor before we can tackle anything on the floor.
So was reestablishing a culture, like this is like what comes first, chicken or the egg. There's the philosophy, which oftentimes dictates the culture. But if there's not a baseline or foundation of any culture, I imagine you have to start with some sort of culture. What was first? You had a philosophy, but you had a culture that needed fixed. How do you manage both of those? Your philosophy is X, but the culture needs to be Y, but which one needs to come first? And maybe does it depend on the situation you inherit?
I think it depends on the situation you inherit, but I also think it depends on the relationship that you have with your student athletes. So the first thing that was really important to me whenever I got here was reaching out to these student athletes individually, hearing about their experience before and what they want their experience to look like, and figuring out how to tie that into what I want, the culture and the philosophy and where I want this program to go. The way that I kind of do my coaching is I really like to give my students a voice, whether they come in as a freshman or if they're a senior. I believe that everybody has something important to provide to our program. So being able to listen to their voice kind of gave me that groundwork to be able to build the program into what it has been today. And we still hold that philosophy true, is our freshmen, sophomores, juniors, seniors, everybody has an equal voice. At the end of the day, our staff and myself do have that last say, but we do weigh heavily how they believe our culture should shift so that we can be successful.
And what is that philosophy for you? And what are kind of the core values, core pillars of your philosophy?
I would say that great coaches are teachers. And if you are going to enter into this program, we are going to teach you valuable lessons about life, about basketball, about any aspect that you will encounter. I think what's really important for me as a female is that we are producing strong, independent women who will leave here and be ready to tackle whatever their future is, learning to have their own voice, not being afraid to use their voice, learning to stand up for themselves. I think those are things that we look to teach and provide in our program. One of the things that I always say is, I will always put the person first, I will put the student second, and then I will put the athlete third. Because if you are not at your best personally, we won't be able to reach those other two. So I think being a great mentor, teaching, just being a great example for them, what my actions are, they will follow. So how I hold myself to a higher standard, I hope that my girls will hold themselves to a higher standard as well.
I imagine you're at the point now with a full recruiting class plus, I think, 1 year where you've already graduated. I believe last year would have been your first class, graduated as a four-year cohort. At what point in this process did building that culture philosophy stop being as much weight on you and you were able to distribute that to the other leaders of the team and it kind of became this self-sufficient, self-cycling thing where you didn't have to do as much of the teaching and preaching with philosophy and culture that the rest of the girls on the team were doing that for you just by instinct as new freshmen came in?
Yeah, I would say it probably took us about 2 years because through COVID, obviously, we did have a year where we weren't competing on the floor. And I think that kind of hurt us because we did get a lot of momentum our first year because we did get wins under our belt. And I think the students that were already here were like, oh, we can do this. But I think in that year that we weren't competing, I was able to build those relationships because there was nothing else that we could do. And once they started learning more about who I was as a person and the trust that we built in that year, that next season, I think us also not being able to compete really opened their eyes to how much they were taking it for granted, that everything that we were saying that we wanted to do, we turned around and did it. And that third year, it was like, I had my seniors, I had Cassie, I had Macy, and it was just like, go get it done. And they understood what they needed to do to get it done. And what they did in the process was they also taught the freshmen, who are now my seniors, and I don't want to cry because they've done such an amazing job for me, but Rachel, Kaylee, Pookie, Emily Party, I gave them full trust in this program, that it kind of just made my job easier, that I could focus more on the X's and O's because they know what the standard is, and it's their job to leave that legacy to the freshmen now so that they carry it forward and understand that where this program was is never where it will be again, and we're only going to continue forward, and that's because of their buy-in and their belief in me, and now they start believing in themselves. And I think that's where you can see the culture changes. Our program is student-led, and it's not coach-led. And that's where championship teams begin to build.
If I'm a high school girl right now playing basketball, I'm interested in Penn College. What are you looking for in me, and how can I get on your radar?
I would say the first thing that we always look at is your hustle and your character. So if you're on the floor and you turn the ball over, what is your reaction? Are you hustling down the floor and trying to get a stop, or are you standing there defeated and pouting? How are you responding to your coaching staff? Are you cheering on your teammates whenever you're on the bench? If a teammate gets knocked down, are you going to be the first one over there to pick them up? We look for character first, and then we look for your athleticism and your talent second. Because our culture is so important to us that we want people that have the same characteristics that we do, immediately into our program. I'm a big defensive-minded coach, so if I see somebody out there wrecking havoc on defense, you're immediately going to catch my eye. And then the scoring will come after that. But your hustle, your character, your defense are definitely going to get my attention when I see you on the floor. And then, hopefully, when we have that talk, you're interested in our majors and your grades are where we'd like them to be, because our grades are super important in our program.
Nice. We have some questions from two of your players, Kenny
Galbraith,
yeah, very scary, and Emily Party, also
scary.
Known as Pookie. So first question, we understand that sometimes pants might be split during games. What do you have to say for yourself?
I would say that was my first game at Penn College. We were down at Alvernia for a tournament, and it was our first game of the season. And Macy Ilgen took a charge. And I don't know what it was, but I went down, I squatted down, and I gave like a woohoo moment. Like it was just down and up. And I turned around to my assistant at the time, and I said, "Did you just hit me with your clipboard?" He was like, "No." And I was like, "Yeah, you did." He was like, "No, I didn't." And then I had a little split in my pants.
Interesting.
I didn't have to change them, so that was a good thing. I continued my coaching, but I got really excited.
Powered through it, huh?
Yeah, got to.
Awesome.
Got to do anything for the girls.
All right, let's talk about game day excitement. You're known for, I would say, two things that are pretty recognizable. One is the foot stomping, which between you and Coach Hensley, I said to him the other day, is the reason we're getting a new floor, because you guys stomp so much. But then there's the hands up and the yeah. That was pretty good impersonation.
That was very good.
I felt like I was just at a women's basketball
game. I know, you sounded exactly like me.
I've been practicing. Explain yourself.
I am a passionate person. And good ways and bad ways. I want my girls to see and hear the excitement I have for them when they're competing on the floor. Because if you know that your coach is ride or die for you, in all aspects, you're going to perform at a higher level. And whenever I want us to perform to a higher level, my voice might tend to go a little bit higher too. And the excitement might get a little crazy.
And the yes are means we're doing a good thing.
Yeah. So okay. If we're on defense and we're in a full court press and we are getting the offense to get the ball to the sidelines in our trapping areas, and I see that opportunity that they might not see, I will start yelling, yeah, because I want them to continue to do it. Like, keep pursuing, keep doing this, because we're going to be able to make something happen out of this play. Okay. Or if our posts are open, yeah, like, hit her. She's open.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Is there a message you have to PA announcers potentially throughout the Mid-Atlantic region? For some reason, and it escapes me how Brittany Mone has been announced as Bridget, Brittini, Mahoney. It's quite simple. It's Brittany with an I, Mone.
Yep.
How often has your simple name been butchered?
Almost every game I honestly go to, and then I kind of just make a joke about it now. I'm like, who is that? Who's that coach? Wait, I don't know who she is.
Did I get replaced?
Yeah. Maybe it's my alter ego. Yeah. Maybe that's what I should run with.
Bridget Mahoney. So for any PA announcers out there listening, which I assume is many, it's Brittany Mone.
Yeah. Like Billy Idol, the Mone song.
One more thing, kind of a little bit off topic. This comes from me. I wrote this in. The word mile and the word file is pronounced howl from the Western PA girl.
Mile.
File. And pile.
Yeah.
Has the pronunciation of either of these words limited you in any way whatsoever?
You know, there is a very wise man that works at this institution that we might call him President Michael Reed, who also comes from the same region.
Yes.
And he also has the same dialect as me. So if I am following in his footsteps, I would count myself pretty lucky that I get to say mile and pow and foul.
That's true.
And I'm just going to own how awesome my dialect is and how proud I am of my Yinzer background.
Yes, you and Mike do have, Mike does speak like that. And yes, I did eat.
Did you eat yet?
Yes.
You want to go downtown?
Downtown.
Southside?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pierogies? Want to put some fries on a sandwich? What about a salad?
Fries on a salad.
Fries on a salad.
And it's a Pittsburgh. Yeah. Fries on anything, you should call it a Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, I'm glad you cleared all of those things up because they needed to be cleared up, quite frankly. All right, two more questions for you before we wrap this up. Favorite moments? Favorite moment on the court, favorite moment off the court. Do you have one, two, three? Give us some of your favorites.
Boy, coaching is my favorite. There are some that stick out to me. I would say one that sticks out the most was when we took Morrisville into overtime in the regular season and ended up beating them on the road. The excitement that our girls had and the way the locker room just erupted afterwards was just a moment where you were just like, we're doing this. Like, we're really building something special here. The girls believe in themselves. Like, it wasn't the Penn College that we used to be. And I will say that my favorite moment off the court all the time, every single year, is watching those girls walk across the stage, becoming women, entering their own power. Is really a fulfilling moment because whenever you're recruiting them, they're 16, 17, they're young girls trying to figure out life, trying to figure out what they want to do for their future. And then they leave here and they're strong women and they're confident and they know what they want to do with their futures. And you were a part of that journey. And that is such a special process to be a part of that will forever always be my favorite off the court moment.
And you've had two commencement speakers, Macy and Shelby. What's that experience like? I mean, graduation in and of itself is great to see that, but then to see one of your women addressing their peers has to be incredible.
It is a insanely fulfilling moment as a person. If you would see me standing in the back of the Community Arts Center, I'm probably the one that's bawling and trying to keep it together because you're hearing them talk about their journey and they're openly talking about the appreciation that they had for you and for the program and for the institution. And both of them actually said, work hard and have fun, was a part of their speech. And that's something that we always say on our board before going up to play. We have our keys to the win, and it's normally 1 through 7, and 6 is work hard and 7 is have fun. And both of them included that in their speech. So be able to hear them take what you're trying to instill in them and give that message to a bigger audience is just a really humbling moment. And it makes me insanely proud of those girls and what they're about to accomplish.
I don't think there's a better way to end it than that. If people listening want to follow the journey of your team, where on social media can they follow you?
We are on Instagram and Twitter at PCT Women's Basketball.
There you have it. Coach Moni, thank you so much for joining us. That concludes this episode of Wildcast.